environmental justice to wildlife conservation and our oceans. Details at dceff.org. That's dceff.org.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington. Welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. I'm your host, David Whetstone, for this hour, and it's the hour of We the People, a news magazine, most of the time live, dealing with the intersection of race, history, politics, and culture. Our guest today is Zenobu Irene Davis. She is a UCLA MFA film and video graduate, and she has produced numerous award-winning films and video projects. Her passionate vision is focused on the depiction of African-American women, their hopes and dreams, past and future. Her interests include altering and diversifying the terrains of mass media, film history, world cinema, and folklore. Our topic for today is called Compensation. It's the story of two couples, each at the bookends of the 20th century. It's a portrait of the struggles of the deaf, African Americans, and the complexities of loving relationships. A story of inclusion and visibility, battling against the social forces and prejudice. I should say that Compensation is a newly 4K restored film. And I congratulate Ms. Davis. It's been in the put into the National Registry as of the end of last year. It's been part of the Real Abilities Film Festival of Greater Washington earlier this year. And it's among many of Ms. Davis's films. They include Cycles, A Powerful Thing, Mother of the River, and Spirits of Rebellion. And along with that film production, she frequently writes and lectures in African-American cinema and currently serves as a professor of communications at the University of California, San Diego. With all that, thank you, Ms. Davis, for being here, and good morning.
Good morning, David. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on your show.
I always start with people understanding the guest as far as their work, what they're dedicated to, what their call to, what their mission is. Can you just tell us a little bit about what you try to do in your filmmaking and how it leads to this wonderful work? I believe your debut feature film, Compensation.
Yes, that Compensation was first released in 1999, but this version of it, we're calling it a rejuvenation. So that was completed in 2024. And one of the reasons why we're calling it a rejuvenation instead of a restoration is that restoration implies that we just restored it back to the original state. A rejuvenation implies that I use the technology that's available to me now in 2024, as well as a team of dedicated, family members, professionals, etc., to bring the film into the 21st century with even more immersive captioning for deaf and hard of hearing, much better sound than what we had originally. It's now stereo. Back in 1999, it was mono. And then also the image looks much better than it ever did before, because it's going, the best way for me to describe it so most people can understand it is that it's going from 1,000 lines in the image to 4,000 lines in
So
the image.
more compressed, clearer,
Yeah.
vivid image.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, and a little bit more of the qualitative, if you please. The stories and experience of deaf people are often neglected in the arts, and particularly deaf people of color, black deaf people. And they're neglected in that media or medium of film. What motivated you to tell this particular story? How did you get there?
Okay. When my screenwriter, who also happens to be my husband, Mark Arthur Cherry, wrote the screenplay for Compensation, we originally just wrote it for any actress. But we happened to go see a performance in St. Paul, Minnesota, of at the Northern Sign Theater, and it was Michelle Angela Banks doing her one-woman show. And Michelle's performance just knocked me out. And I looked at Mark, he looked at me, and we were like, we gotta have Michelle in this film. So I didn't, I didn't know if she would do it. I stalked her backstage after her performance, waited her to come out the back door, and then just like started communicating her with her as best I could on paper and pen. That we loved her performance, because I didn't have experience with deaf folks really before meeting Michelle. And so we, rewrote and researched Black deaf culture. We had, and I took ASL classes, American Sign Language classes, so that I could learn to communicate with her better. And we also had Michelle and various deaf members of the community in Chicago look at our script, talk to us, and make sure we tried to keep it as authentic as possible to deaf experiences of Black folks. So that was kind of how we came to have her be a part of the film. And, I just firmly believe that there should be an inclusion of, Black folks from all over the diaspora and the continent of Africa in terms of representations. And I hadn't experienced a representation of Black woman on screen. And so it fits my mission to, include more images of people that we don't get to see in Hollywood mainstream cinema. So that's how we came to cast Michelle as the lead for Compensation.
And she's one half of the couples portrayed in the film. Tell us about the other half, Mr. Jelks.
Mr. John Earl Jelks, he is my muse. I put him in almost every film that I can if he's available. He was in A Powerful Thing. If I can always, you know, grab him for something, I will. You can see him more recently in a film called Exhibiting Forgiveness, which is now streaming on Hulu. If you have access to it, please check it out. But John Earl Jelks is favorite actor of all time for me to work with because he is so understanding of what independent filmmakers need and do. He's not, you know, he's not conceited. He will do whatever it is that I throw at him. I asked him to learn how to play a mandolin, like the basics. He learned how to play the mandolin. He had to gain weight for me for A Powerful Thing and learn how to play the saxophone. So he's just super intuitive actor who just will do whatever he needs to do to get the project done. And he and Michelle, you know, worked very hard to make sure that they got the historical references in the film correct. You know, they mentored each other, they worked with each other in trying to develop their characters and make the film be the now classic that it is. So as it, you know, I can't say enough about how much I respect and honor both Michelle and John. And, you know, I'm planning, I'm fundraising right now to put them in a new film that I'm doing called Stars of the Northern Sky, which tells the story of enslaved women of the North. And that would be Sojourner Truth, the woman who did the Ain't I a Woman speech, and then Phyllis Wheatley, the first Black woman to have a book of poetry published in the United States. And then I'm going to give you a little bit of another angle on it because I'm including a woman by the name of Marie-Joseph Angelique, who is the enslaved woman who allegedly burnt down the city of Montreal in 1731. And my mother was from Montreal, Canada. So I wanted to include the Canadian side in this particular new documentary that I'm working on.
A lot there. It's a testament to you and the work of a good director that actors want to stick with you. In fact, I understand that Ms. Banks will be with you when the film is shown here in Washington, D.C. later this weekend, and I'll give you an opportunity to tell us all about that in a little while. But the other thing with their work is that they're telling a difficult story. Most folks would shy away, and it's sad in the arts of, you know, dealing with this subject matter, and they deal with it ably under you and your crew's facilitation. You know, I obliquely alluded to these other films. Do I have it right? A Powerful Thing? Is that the jazz documentary?
No, no.
Or the jazz story?
No. A Powerful Thing is a love story set in Afro, Ohio. And then the jazz thing is a jazz documentary was a documentary on trumpetist Clora Bryant. So it was trumpetistically Clora Bryant. She was a trumpet player for over 60 years. And unfortunately, most people don't know about her because she wasn't recorded as much as she should have been as a trumpetist. She played with Billie Holiday, Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, all these jazz greats, but there isn't much documentation of her artistry with the trumpet. So my documentary, Trumpetistically Clora Bryant.
Again, which film was that? Forgive
me. Trumpetistically Clora Bryant.
Okay, got it. And it's a challenge. I'll do a shout out to Rusty Hassan and some of our other, dare I say, veteran jazz programmers. They're quite the historian. So, and I'm sure Rusty's going to tell me he knows about her, but I'll bring it to his attention and thank you. And I did that quite deliberately because I know many of our listening audience, if they're interested in PFW and public affairs, they're also interested in jazz. We are indeed the Jazz and Justice radio station. Where do we go from here? There's a lot that's put and reflected into the film. You know what? I will just reintroduce you for the moment, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking to filmmaker Zenobo Irene Davis. She is not only a filmmaker, but a professor of communications at the University of California, San Diego. She has produced a film called Compensation, the story of two black deaf couples of the 20th century, the beginning and the ending of it. And we're talking about that very interesting subject and story as part of our topic in this today's show. You're listening to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone. Miss Davis, again, a pleasure to have you. Let's even dive deeper into the background. First of all, your film's put together with archival photographs as well as motion story. So again, you can go ahead and just tell us and describe some of the operation of the film for us, please.
Sure. I just wanted to clarify one thing you said, though, David,
Thank you.
and that is John Earl Jelks's hearing in Michelle Angela Banks's Deaf. So it's a story, love story, two love stories between a deaf black woman and a hearing black man.
And
So,
indeed, that's important to the story since I'm in the film. Forgive me.
No, that's fine. That's fine. That's
Okay.
fine. That's fine. I think, what I was trying to do specifically with compensation is that a lot of our black film history has been lost. And a lot of general American cinema history has been lost because the film was produced on something called nitrate film, which unfortunately, after time, either disintegrates or catches on fire and blows up. So we'd lost a lot of films that were produced in the silent era. And, as a film student, I was bludgeoned with having to watch a film called Birth of a Nation by D.W. Griffith. And the film professors will generally talk about how amazing the technique is in that film, but what they really don't say is it is a glorification of the KKK. And so compensation in its small way is kind of like a retort to that very racist film history and say, no, there were other people that were involved in the makings of cinema. And so we deliberately chose a silent film style. There is no dialogue, there's no spoken dialogue until about 15 minutes into the film, which that's a little bit unusual. And for some people, it might take a little bit to get used to. And then because I was filming in Chicago in the 1990s, but the first part of the film takes place in Chicago in the 19 teens, I had to be creative and resourceful. So I used archival photographs that I, meticulously went to different archives all over the country, Chicago Historical Society, Schomburg Library, came here to the DC area to Howard and Moreland Spingarn collection and the National Archives and the Library of Congress to get as many images of Black people that I could to kind of flesh out that background. And I did it with sound and images to make sure that you could kind of immerse yourself in the 19 teens, store part of the story.
And sound the at least in the background or in the setting, it does really add to the story, of course. You mentioned that there was black efforts of movie making. A lot of people know of Oscar Michaud, but you and I both know that there were film production companies by black folk in Chicago as well.
Yes. And we make a point of that. There's a film within a film with compensation. When the period couple played the characters are named Melindy and Arthur, when they go to the movies for the first time in about 1911, 1912, they see a movie called The Railroad Porter, and it was by Foster Photoplay Company. That was a real photo, a real production, movie production studio that started in Chicago as early as 1911. And William Foster was the kind of like, all encompassing entrepreneur, photographer, kind of like, jack of all trades who decided that, hey, we need to be making our own film. So this is even before, Birth of a Nation. This is 1911. So unfortunately, it's because of it being, a film that was probably done on nitrate. We don't know where it is, or it's been lost or destroyed due to time. So I took the synopsis that I found in the Chicago Defender newspaper and recreated the scene for my film Compensation. And so,
And by the way, brief interruption, the Chicago Defender was one of the national papers of records for black communities in the United States. If I'm not mistaken, it's got its start in 1905.
yes, correct. 1905. Yes. And that was super important, because we have these black newspapers that existed across the country. They are a source of our history. And, I was able to go back into the archives and find that synopsis and recreate the film. Except I just put a little bit of a Xanabu twist on it. There's three characters. It's a woman and a man who are supposed to be like caught in maybe a love triangle situation, and each of them has a gun. The policeman, who's maybe the husband or the partner, and then the railroad porter himself has a gun. And in my version, the woman, the love interest, also has a gun. So they chase each other around.
And it's in comedic fashion, even
Yes.
though guns are a pretty serious thing, it's comedic.
Yes, it's very much slapstick humor that you found in a lot of the early silent movies.
And you upheld the tradition that some of us joke about in our private moments. There was some talk back
Oh,
here
yeah.
within the picture.
Yes, that's what audiences are loving when they come to the film, is like, because of I think people noticed it when the version of Compensation came out in 1999. But because this new version in 2024 has I have more opportunities to put captioning so you can actually see the talk back of black folks to the screen. You see the words on the screen. So it really kind of like, hits you that, oh my goodness, black people were talking back to the movies from the beginning. That was true. I mean, that's how we are as a community. And that's what I really appreciate and love about having the opportunity to see a film with other people in the movie theater, is because it's a communal experience that we all respond to. And some of us respond in more senses than
Differently.
others.
We're rapidly approaching the halfway point in our show. I want to do two things. I want to again take a deep dive. We're in the medium of radio, and people won't get a sense of a lot of things that go into your work in this picture called Compensation. You just talked about this sense of community, even displayed at the movie theater, which was pretty much a modest makeshift theater as black folk were making their way. In your dedication, one of the three individuals is Tony Cade Bambara.
Yes.
In my researching your background, I understand you met Ngugi wa Thiong'o in Kenya. In the movie, there's a lot of Pan-African and Afro-centric things reflected in even the remnants of African ritual that are performed by various characters. Can you say a little bit about all this, I'm trying to find a beautiful word for it. All the input, all the influx, all which results in output that comes from you.
Okay. First, I want to remind our listeners that Compensation will be showing on Sunday, March 30th at 4:15 at the AFI Silver Spring Theater in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. And after the screening, I will be participating in a Q&A session with lead actress Michelle Banks and also co-lead actress A. Jala Roberts and Alexis Heith, an upcoming emerging producer and filmmaker, will be moderating the discussion. And discussion will include ASL, American Sign Language, interpretation for audiences. You know, thank you for that question. Toti K. Bambara was my heart. It was like, I just like look up to her so much as a writer extraordinaire and as an activist and as a teacher and as a community, you know, cultural worker. And I try very hard to like think about what would Toni K. do in a situation, and you know, not be thinking like that I'm too big to actually, you know, talk to everyday folk on the bus or the train or on the street. You know, Toni had the reputation of being a writer, but you know, when folks heard that when she was living in either Atlanta or Philadelphia or New York, you know, people would come up to her on the bus, "Hey, you that writer lady." And what they wanted from her was the opportunity for someone to write a letter for them that was like something was going on with the landlord or something was going on in the community. And Toni was never too busy to not do that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I tried to aspire to have that sense of community and activism that she has. And then my life was changed when I met Ngugi Wa Thiong'o. I happened to do a semester abroad in Kenya, East Africa in the early 80s. And I met Ngugi because he was teaching at University of Nairobi at that time. And he was working on a play that involved community actors and elders from the community who took part in the quote unquote Mau Mau struggle for independence from British colonialism, you know, back in the day. And so when Ngugi and his group of fellow artists put that play on stage in Kenya, I was a part of the crew that helped to put the photographs, the historic photographs behind on the stage. But 3 days after that play went up, it was taken down. The government bulldozed the theater, and Ngugi had to go back into hiding. And Ngugi had been imprisoned in the late 70s. And so he did not want to go back to prison for just telling the truth. So, you know, he left the country at that time. And so I've always been inspired by his bravery and commitment to telling our stories. And I knew that I wanted to do stories that involved the medium of film because they were universal and they could travel, because cinema is a universal language. You don't always have to know what the spoken words are to be able to tell the story or to understand what the story is trying to tell you. And my experience when I was studying with Ngugi is we were, you know, watching white filmmakers from Belgium and Germany come and do films in Kenya, but they were always doing films about like wildlife. They weren't doing films that actually looked at the beauty of the people who lived in Kenya. And there's like, you know, 17 different languages that are spoken in Kenya. And it was like, at that time, it was about 17 million people as well. So those stories could be told.
And even at that time, right, there were quite a few distinctive African filmmakers as well.
Yes, Sembene Ousmane, Safi Fai, you know, Sarah Maldoror, who's originally from the Caribbean, but she was the first Black woman to make a feature film in Angola. It's called Zombizanga. You guys can, you know, look for it. It is available on some streamers, I believe.
Could you say the title one more time so people can catch it?
Yes, it's Zombizanga, Sambizanga, and it came out in 1972. And Usman Sembene is like considered
of course
one of the fathers of African cinema. And he has so many great classic films that our listeners can look up and watch. One being Black Girl, which is one of his first films in 1966, and then a classic film that he does in 1975 called Hala, Xala. And I encourage you to look him up and watch his works, because they are masterworks.
Often referred to on our show Africa Now with host Muwiza Mutale.
Yes.
1 p.m. on Wednesdays. He just is finishing up the new African Film Festival with a number of people. You've given me the bridge, a connection that we will need to make, but we need to do our due diligence and render some public service announcements. So I ask the audience to stick with us. You're listening to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone, right here at WPFW 89.3 FM. WPFWFM.org. Stay with us and we'll be right back after this.
African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora is featured at the 21st New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 14 to the 27th. The festival features 29 films from 19 countries, discussions with filmmakers, and more. The 2025 New African Film Festival features the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver or at 301-495-6700. That's 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hello, WPFW. Festival season is here. You know what that means. Good events, good music, good food, good people, good weather, and the 9th annual Words, Beats, and Life Festival happening April 3rd through the 6th all over Washington, D.C. There will be DJs, concerts, poetry slams, children's activities, and a festival. Details can be found at wblinc.org/WBLFest.
And welcome back to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone, right here at your Jazz and Justice radio station for 48 years, because people like you, the listeners, choose to not only socially connect with us, but financially support us too. And for those modalities, for those actions, for your generosity, I thank you. I thank you very much, along with the staff and programmers here at your Pacifica radio station out of Washington, D.C. Ms. Davis, again, thank you for being with us. We're talking to Zenobu Irene Davis, filmmaker, professor of communications at the University of California, San Diego. So well versed and able with African American cinema and world cinema. So thank you for being with us. Thank you for talking about your film Compensation, a story of two couples. One non-hearing and one hearing in the previous century, the 20th century, which we've just come out of. You know, we started the show with a deep dive into some of your background, and yet there's more. I want to give you an opportunity to explain to people that you were part of something called the LA Rebellion. What was that?
Okay. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here, David. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome.
The LA Rebellion filmmakers were, or we are, a group of filmmakers who came out of UCLA's film school. It's generally the period that happens after the Watts Uprising in 1965, and it goes all the way through to the Rodney King uprising in 1992. And I also say that it's continuing today, but it's morphed into different ways of being a movement. And this is a group of primarily filmmakers of African descent. What was wonderful and beautiful about UCLA film school was that it was a public film school, so it was more financially accessible for people from all over the world to come to. So we, at that time, we had filmmakers who came from Nigeria, South Africa, the Caribbean, Europe, and all different parts of the United States, including Mississippi, which is where Charles Burnett is from, and Julie Dash from New York, Barbara McCullough from Louisiana via, Pasadena, Bernard Nicolas from Haiti, Ofumalayo Makara, who's here and from Maryland, and like all
And
these.
last but not least, we better not
Oh, and
forget
we
this,
have,
Haile Gerima
yes,
of
Holly Gerima.
Sankofa.
Yep, Holly Gerima from Sankofa Bookstore and Video, and world-renowned Ethiopian filmmaker, as well as his partner Shirikiana Aina Gerima, who's from Detroit. So it's all of
Yes.
that kind of like we're not all in school at the exact same time, but we create a community that enables us to tell stories about people who are from our community. And that was the difference. At that time in the late 60s, early 70s, there wasn't like much representation of Black folks on in media other than some very harmful stereotypes. So what we as filmmakers did, so talking about Billy Woodbury, Charles Burnett, Julie Dash, Barbara McCullough, Ofumalayo Makara, et cetera, what we all did was to try to make films of and tell stories of people who are represented from our community, our neighborhoods. And what we did was we also involved the community in our filmmaking processes. That's the only way that we could get our films to actually get made anyway, is by relying on our families and friends to help out or participate in whatever way possible. And it could be something as simple as just, bringing a meal to the crew so we have something to eat other than cold pizzas. Everybody would like to be on my shoots when I was in school because, my future husband's mother would make, beautiful Haitian dishes, chicken and black beans and rice so that my crew got fed really well. So everybody wanted to be on my crew because of that. But the LA Rebellion Filmmakers is a very important cinema movement that involves lots of wonderful people, and especially people like Ben Caldwell and Haile Gerima, who d established media centers so people could keep doing the works that we learned from being at a film school like UCLA. And Haile has the Haile and Shirikiana have the Sankofa Bookstore in Washington, D.C., which is right across the street from
From Howard.
University. And Ben Caldwell has the Chaos Network, which is right in the heart of the Merck Park in Los Angeles.
And just to arrest people's attention, what beautiful fruit has come from that movement, a movement that really does humanize us because we are indeed human, us Black folk, among other humans. So Charles Burnett produces To Sleep with Anger or The Killer of Sheep, Julie Dash, Daughters of the Dust, and my present memory, I can't think of the correlates for the other filmmakers right now, but if there's any films that you want to mention from that group, please do.
Yeah, the works of Lele Sharon Larkin, With Your Children Come Back to You, and then Ofumalayo Makara, L.A. on My Mind, as well as, there's so many films that Haile did, Child of Resistance,
Yes.
Sankofa,
Yeah. Adwa.
Adwa,
Yeah.
Haile does documentaries as well as narrative films, and a lot of us,
Working on the Maroon and
exactly.
Maroonish right now.
Yes. And Shirikiana does documentaries. Brick by Brick is one of her classic ones, which still stood the test of time because, we're still talking about gentrification and, urban upheaval even now. She was talking about it back in 1980 something. So we're still talking about the same things now. So there's so many wonderful filmmakers that came through the LA Rebellion. Carol Parrott Blue was a documentary producer who worked on the Eyes on the Prize series on PBS, and did a. She was one of the first people to do interactive media with her work, The Dawn at My Back, which is about her upbringing in Houston, Texas. You know, and we also have like some mainstream filmmakers too, Jamal Fanaka, you know, the Penitentiary series as well.
Wow, interesting.
No, from him, but he was also at UCLA Film School at the time. So it's, you know, it's a loose group of filmmakers, and, you know, it's not to say that there were not other filmmakers, particularly Chicano, Indigenous, and Asian filmmakers who were, and white committed, socially committed, and politically, you know, politically committed and being allies. So, you know, we were all going through that experience at the same time. And so we really did do our best to try to tell different types of stories. We might not be famous in the mainstream sense of the word, but, you know, one thing about the LA Rebellion filmmakers is that the work still lasts. And if people want to find out more about the LA Rebellion, they can go to the UCLA Film and Television website and just write in Los Angeles Rebellion or LA Rebellion, and you can actually see the names of the filmmakers, and you have access to some of our short films. It's still a part of the website. There was a retrospective of our work back in 2011, but that the website has kept up that list of the makers and their films.
That cross-pollination has brought us bountiful fruit, so thank you for that citation. I wanted to get back to some of your film work as reflected in Compensation. History is just so terribly important. You know, we've mentioned the proper noun, Sankofa, so much about going back and bringing stuff forward for the present and the future, going back and bringing things forward for the present and the future. The cultural references really function in so many ways in this film that you've made, but they're quite operative as far as how people care for each other, how they find the means to love each other. I mean, obviously, one of the things is the Great Migration is reflected in the film. Can you tell us about some of the other aspects? I want to respect your creative effort here, not give away the store, so to speak, but can you just talk about a little bit more about the operation of the cultural references in the film?
Yes, thank you for that question, David. I think, you know, some of the first people that I met when I got to UCLA, I received a scholarship or in access. Hiley was the one who told me to go to UCLA. I wanted to go to Howard, but he said, go to UCLA. At that time, UCLA had better equipment, and he thought that I'm hard-headed enough that I can deal with racism and sexism, which I did have to deal with once I got to UCLA. And there was a wonderful professor there by the name of Tshomi Gabriel, who was kind of like the mentor to all of us who were trying to do like different types of cinema. So it was Dr. Tshomi Gabriel and Professor Beverly Robinson, who was in the theater department. Those were the ones who really kind of got a lot of us through the various, you know, good times and bad times that we faced. And so having taken courses with both Tshomi and Dr. Robinson, you know, I learned a lot about folklore and culture. And I also happened to meet, when I got to UCLA, two gentlemen who, one became one of my best friends, who was kind of like my brother, Pierre Desir, who was my cinematographer on Compensation. And the other one is the one who became my husband, Mark Arthur Cherry, and he's the screenwriter for Compensation. So this little knucklehead girl from West Oak Lane, Philadelphia, in 1983, meets these two gentlemen, and Tshomi says, you know, take care of her. And I'm like looking at him cross-eyed because I'm like, I don't need anybody to take care of me. And lo and behold, he was right. They have taken care of me. They took care of me for more than 40 years in terms of a creative collaboration. Unfortunately, Pierre is not with us. He
I'm
passed
sorry.
from cancer and COVID in 2023, but he's still with me in spirit. And they dubbed themselves the Haitian sensation. That was Pierre's word, the Haitian sensation. So I was always very aware of the very harmful stereotypes that we still endure today about Haitian people and Haitian culture. In the 80s, it was Haitian people, were supposed to be the bearer of HIV/AIDS, and you didn't want them in your communities. So I felt very compelled to make sure that in my work, in our work, in the work of myself, Mark, and Pierre, that we showed elements of Haitian culture, which we call vodou in the film. So there are symbols for the various gods of Haitian vodou. So there's symbols for Aizan and Legba in compensation, and they have to deal with their symbols. These are the signatures of the gods, which help you to go towards movements that's either healing, protection, or talking about like opening up a story. And so I also have a lot of altars in all of my films. I lost my mother when I was very young. I was 22. I always have a picture of her in most of my films. She's always on the personal altars that are part of the character's story. So I'm trying to kind of bring back that or just remind us about the African spirituality that we came with when we crossed the oceans to come over to the so-called New World, the Americas. And so my way of doing that is to use either song or music to try to bring those back to us in terms of an expression of culture within my work.
And on that theme, you also bring up some other references. But first, let me reintroduce you for the moment. Listeners, you're listening to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone. And as I often say, please put your focus on the topic and the guest. Our topic is Black filmmaking, a movie called Compensation. Our guest is filmmaker Zenobu Irene Davis. Ms. Davis is with us, offering us much, much wonderful things from not only her movie, but the history of African American filmmaking. And that's, we appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, and I want to remind listeners that Compensation will be showing Sunday, March 30th at 4:15 at AFI Silver Spring in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. After the screening, I'll be participating in a question and answer session along with lead actress Michelle Angela Banks and A. Jala Roberts. Filmmaker and media artist Alexis Heith will moderate the discussion, and ASL interpretation will be provided. And also just learned that Compensation will also play on Monday, March 31st at 6:15, and Wednesday, April 2nd at 6:15, also at AFI Silver. So please come out and support us. It's really important for us to go back to that practice of going to movies and seeing movies with the audience. So please support local independent theater as well as supporting independent radio. So we need all of these things, particularly in these chaotic times that we're living in right now.
You know, you've referenced institutions, and again, I was thinking about the historical references. Kind of stop me if I am no one to give away. I like people to be surprised and wonderfully engaged by the spirit impromptu. But in the film, as we said earlier, history is important. The actual lived experiences of people are important. Melindy was educated at the Kendall School for the Deaf, and the dynamics around that school and what she experienced are not unsimilar to what goes on today. And then we can talk about what she became or what she practiced. You just talked about self-care and caring for others, but first let's start with some of the institutions involved in her story, and then we can talk about the other practices in a bit.
Yeah. You know, because again, because I didn't have the financial resources to make Chicago of 1990 look like Chicago of the 19 teens, I went back, and I also came here to Washington, D.C. area to do research at Howard, but I also did research at Gallaudet University, which is one of the premier universities for deaf and hard of hearing people in the United States. And I discovered, along with the archivists, there were images of the Kendall School, which was founded in 1893, but unfortunately, and it was a school for everybody. There were images in my film, in our film compensation, where you see that there are Indigenous Americans and Blacks and white students going
all together. Yeah.
All together at that school. But unfortunately, some issue comes to play. And then by 1905, I think it is, that the school is suddenly segregated again. So then Black students and students of color are expelled from the school, you know. So this is kind of eerie how this is, you know, kind of
replaying itself, no?
Replaying itself in our own time. And I also wanted to point out for listeners that the film features Black music from that particular time period. And that's the beautiful ragtime score of Reginald R. Robinson, who actually is a MacArthur Genius Award. And he is a ragtime maestro, a master. And he's in the film. He's the guy who plays the railroad porter in the film within a film. And we are working on trying to produce a soundtrack album to accompany the film when we have the video released by Criterion in August of this year, 2025.
I just remembered also that, and when you're talking about the music, Scott Joplin is deeply acknowledged.
Yeah.
So we're talking about ragtime music, and we have quickly run out of time. I want to give you the last word. The characters do a lot of self-care, and they draw on whatever resources they have, particularly Melindy. So if you would, tell us why the title Compensation, and what does that reflect? And then please add anything else. It's unfair to you, but we have about a minute and a half.
Okay. I'll do it as quick as I can.
Thank you.
The thing that the person that Melindy is inspired by is Ida Wells Barnett. And we know that Ida B. Wells Barnett was a journalist, and she was a writer. And so the character of Melindy, you know, is journaling. She's shown journaling, which is a sign of self-care. And so that was important to us to make sure that we included that into the film itself. And then Scott Joplin was also a maestro who unfortunately was forgotten for a long period of time. And his, you know, opera, his ragtime opera, Treemonisha, was something that he wrote as early as 1903, I believe, or in the early 1900s at least. And, you know, it was lost until like the 70s. And then it was, you know, republished and celebrated. And it's an opera. It's a ragtime opera. So again, there are these things about our culture and history and art that needs to be preserved and recognized. And hopefully through our film Compensation, that's one of those films that can, you know, help to restore and preserve that history and culture.
And again, been speaking to Compensations Director Zenobu Irene Davis. Ms. Davis, I'm so sorry we're out of time, but I thank you for being with us. My thanks to Mike Nasella, our engineer, the News and Public Affairs Department at WPFW. Coming up next, don't forget the Blues with Clarence the Bluesman Turner at 3, Sophie's Parlor, Music and Culture by Women, but for everyone. At 2, Zen El Amin, Shewanana, Middle Eastern Affairs are covered. And at 1, African Hour with host Moisa Mutali. Thank you for being with us. Take care.
Filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora is featured at the 21st New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 14 to the 27th. The festival features 29 films from 19 countries, discussions with filmmakers, and more. The 2025 New African Film Festival features the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa. Tickets and full schedule at afi.com/silver. That's afi.com/silver or at 301-495-6700. That's 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hello, WPFW. Festival season is here. You know what that means. Good events, good music, good food, good people, good weather, and the 9th annual Words, Beats, and Life Festival happening April 3rd through the 6th all over Washington, D.C. There will be DJs, concerts, poetry slams, children's activities, and a festival. Details can be found at wblinc.org/WBLFest.
On Sunday, March 30th at 6 p.m. at the National Press Club, the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation presents the Woman of Courage Awards Gala in honor of Mammy Till Mobley, the mother of Emmett Till, celebrating women who exemplify the strength, resilience, and courage of Mammy Till Mobley. Activist ancestor Dori Ladner and her sister Joyce are among 18 honorees who embody Mammy Till Mobley's unwavering courage that ignites the civil rights movement and continues to inspire generations today. Details at Eventbrite under Women of Courage Awards Gala. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Jazz lovers, the 15th annual Washington Women in Jazz Festival is back with a weekend of performances, workshops, and jam sessions at the Penn Arts Mansion in Washington, D.C. on March 29th and 30th. From interactive workshops to concerts and late-night jams, there's something for everyone. Details at WashingtonWomenInJazz.com. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come.
Hi, this is Robin Holden, the proprietor of Robin's Place, every Friday evening from 7 until 10 p.m. Robin's Place is a mythical entertainment center consisting of four floors. On each floor of Robin's Place, we have rooms that are named after people who I think are icons in music, theater, and literature. We have the Nancy Wilson Room, the Joe Williams Room, the Gloria Lynn Room, the Frank Sinatra Room, the B.B. King Blues Room, the James Baldwin Library, just to name a few. Join me Friday nights from 7 until 10 p.m. as I take you on a musical journey you'll never forget. Robin's Place.
Come the day you're mine, I'm gonna teach you to fly.
Hey, this is Alvin Nedab, your host of Music Memories, and my co-host,
Deborah Nedab.
And guess what, Deborah?
What?
We're moving.
We're moving?
That's right. We're moving from Mondays, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. to Saturdays, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. starting next Saturday, March 22nd. And Deborah, guess what?
What?
We're going to still continue to play the best old school music of all time. So we just want you to be there. 89.3.
Diversity Fund is a grassroots grant source for changemakers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, March 21st. Details and application information are available at www.diversityfund.org. You can